This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Anti-Semitism has been in the news lately, particularly on university campuses where students and outsiders have been chanting, you know, death to Jews, death to America, genocide to Israel, and a range of other statements that are anti-Semitic, both in effect and in intent. And for many young people, they don't understand this is not a new phenomenon. Anti-Semitism is the oldest prejudice, continuing prejudice known to humankind. It started in biblical times, and it continued, obviously, through the millennia and through the generations. Just to put it in a more relevant context, in modern times, relatively modern times, in the middle of the 18th century, about 1750, finally, the legislature of Great Britain, the Parliament, passed what was called the Jew Law. I have a copy of it. And it was for the first time it permitted Jews to be citizens and even serve in the Parliament without converting to Christianity. Within a year, there was so much opposition to it that it was rescinded. And the United States became the first country in the history of the world to give equal status to Jews. And it came in the form of a letter to the Hebrew congregation of Rhode Island, written by George Washington in 1790. This is a copy of the letter. And this is the original news report of the letter, contemporaneous in the Gazette of the United States, August 1790. And Washington said, and this was, again, the first time in history this proclamation has been made, the citizens of the United States of America have a right to applaud themselves for having given to mankind examples of an enlarged and liberal policy worthy of imitation. All possess alike liberty of conscience and immunity of citizenship. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of as if it were by the indulgence of one class that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. And this is the key sentence. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that those who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving on all occasions their effectual support. He also wrote letters to the Hebrew congregation of Philadelphia, New York, Charleston, and Richmond, where he made essentially the same point. Really important that both George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson were all friendly to the Jews. Alexander Hamilton's clients, when he was a practicing lawyer in New York, consisted largely of Jewish businessmen. Remember, Alexander Hamilton was the capitalist. You might say that Jefferson was more the agrarian, not quite socialist. He owned slaves, obviously. But the business people, the mercantile people of New York, many of them were Jewish, and many of them were Hamilton's clients. And Abraham Lincoln was very supportive of Jews. When Grant issued a proclamation in the Civil War banning Jewish merchants from a certain area, Lincoln immediately rescinded it. And so on my wall, I have the original newspaper account. I also have lots of other stuff. This is the original Declaration of Independence of Israel, sitting next to the original Declaration of Independence of the United States. On the bottom here is an original copy of Emile Zola's famous, probably the most famous newspaper story in history, it changed history, called J'accuse. I accuse, a letter to the President of the Republic by Emile Zola, who was then the most famous writer in France, supporting the innocence of a Jewish man named Dreyfus, who had been falsely accused. of spying, ultimately he was vindicated. So here we have kind of the beginning of American history. This is French history. Let's move now to a table where I'll bring you more up to date on matters. Obviously, one can move to the Nazi era, which was the worst form of anti-Semitism in history. The Nazi era was brought to us largely by Hitler and Goebbels. This is Joseph Goebbels. He is sitting for a photograph in the early 1930s, somewhere in, I think, Switzerland, and he's being photographed, and his aide whispers to him that he's being photographed by a photographer named Eisenstadt, who was Jewish. And you can just look at the look on his face, and you can see the personification of evil. And you know, here you have two ghetto, when the ghettos were begun and people were sent to the death camps. These are two armbands from the ghettos, and this is a stamp from the ghetto. But you know, Nazism wasn't limited to Germany. This is a postcard you know, sent to an American with Hitler and you know, Nazi stuff on the side of it. And of course, Nazism didn't begin in a vacuum. Here are just some of what was going on in Europe at the time. I mean, this is you know, a Nazi magazine, and it always associated horrible images of Jews with America and Great Britain, who were thought to be on the side of the Jews. In fact, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was called Rosenfeld, and the Jews were always portrayed in this kind of negative way. And just down the street from where I live was, back in those days, called Germantown, Yorktown, and Yorktown had Nazis. They marched down the street, more than 20,000 of them, went to Madison Square Garden and did Heil Hitler salutes for Hitler. And this was kind of a typical postcard that was sent. Christians this year by Gentile. And it was a whole long poem. Peace on earth, goodwill to man. Get her fur coat from Silverman. Silent night, holy night. Darn if I don't think Hitler's right. This year by Gentile. So, you know, that's what we saw going on in those days. This is more of the same. This is an interesting book that was published in Germany right after the war, with the names of all the German judges who were collaborators, and the fact that almost nothing happened to them at the end of the war. Obviously, when the war was over, there was a movement to do something about the Jews, but there was still plenty of anti-Semitism. I mean, here's a statue that was sold all over Europe of a Jew. And in his backpack, in his back, he had a Christian child that he was kidnapping. You know, the notion that Jews kidnap Christian children and use their blood to bake matzahs was a very common theme. Here is a German beer mug from around the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, and every single image on it is a negative image of Jews, as a Jew pickpocketing a sleeping non-Jew, and just all kinds of things that, you know, were typical, or a typical ashtray in Germany, which would have the stereotype picture of a Jew and the ashes, or this was the head of a cane that would have a stereotype picture of a Jew. It was very, very common. It was a little bit of the opposite sometimes too. This is a cute one. This was done by some brave guy in Belgium when Hitler invaded Belgium. And this is a picture, there's a famous statue of a young boy taking a urinating and he's urinating on Hitler in this. Whoever did this, if he were caught, obviously his punishment would have been pretty severe. And, you know, obviously the war ends with Hitler's death, and the old joke that Hitler went to a fortune teller and said, "When am I going to die?" And the fortune teller said, "I can't tell you the exact day, but it will be on a Jewish holiday." And Hitler said, "Well, which Jewish holiday?" And he said, "Well, I don't know, but any day you die will be a Jewish holiday." So there was that. And even in the death camps, they were making models of Hitler. This comes from a death camp. This was made by somebody in a death camp who didn't survive, obviously. And it's what's called a Purim groger. It's a noisemaker for Purim, but it has the Jew, and he's making noise by hitting Hitler on the head and hitting Mussolini on the head. So we can date this because Mussolini died, I think, in 43 or something like that. So it probably occurs around 42. We can't be absolutely sure. And when the war is over in 1945, Albert Einstein writes a very interesting letter to a friend. This is the original of it with the original envelope, in which he says, I'm going to walk around a little to the light so I can read it. "The strangest thing is that even the better people among the Germans, are not conscious of their heavy responsibility for all of these crimes committed by the government they have chosen themselves, and that the outside world is rather inclined to forget about it." If that reminds you a little bit of what's going on with Hamas in Gaza, I would not be surprised. The better people of Hamas also bear some responsibility, obviously, for the horrible things that have happened in Gaza, both to Jews who were murdered on October 7th, but also to Gazan citizens who died as the result of being used as human shields. If we go into my office, you'll see this is an original stone and an original armband and a piece of barbed wire from Auschwitz. My son and I collected it when we were there, probably stole it, but we made a memorial out of it. And this is an actual sign that appeared all over Germany: "Juden verboten," Jews are forbidden, "Deutschland über alles." And so, you know, that's the situation that existed. Now, have things changed? Well, obviously they've changed. There's not going to be another Holocaust because Israel is too strong and it would never permit it to happen. Obviously, there were no Jewish armies at the time of the Second World War. A great Israeli patriot called Jabotinsky tried very hard to establish a Jewish army, but he died before the Holocaust began. And so it was impossible for him to raise the army. But then, you know, Israel came into being. This is an original copy of Herzl, Theodor Herzl's Great Mandate, the Jewish State, an original, the first Hebrew copy of it that exists. And it was the forebearer of Zionism and the establishment of the Jewish state. This is Herzl. Unfortunately, he died at a very young age in his early 40s, but he helped to establish the state, the modern state of Israel. He predicted in 1898 that in 50 years there would be a Jewish state, and 50 years later, in 1948, a Jewish state was established. But, you know, America has a good history. No country has a perfect history, but a good history. Here's an interesting thing from very early American history. This is the first piece of currency signed by a Jew. Levy was a treasurer or something like that, and he got to sign one of the first $2 notes even before the United States was was a state. So Jews have had a long history and quite a successful history in the United States. All right, do we have some time for letters?
Yeah, do you have them here?
Yeah, okay. I have some letters. So let's do a couple of letters.
You want to sit down?
Let's start with an anti-Semitic letter that I got just today. Israel is genocide. That's the bottom line at this point. You have let your personal views cloud your judgment. No, Israel is not genocide. If Israel is genocide, then the United States is genocide. Great Britain is genocide. France is genocide. Israel has killed fewer civilians than any country in modern warfare, both in absolute terms and in terms relative to the number of combatants killed. Let me just compare the death toll in Gaza, which is way exaggerated. Probably if you really ask how many innocent people, totally innocent adult people have been killed in Gaza, it's in the low thousands. Obviously every child and every baby is an innocent person, but the people who are complicit with Hamas are far from innocent. Obviously, when the United States bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, thousands and thousands of innocent people, when they firebombed Dresden, these were all collateral damage. Nobody accused them of genocide, and no rational person can accuse Israel of genocide. Accusing Israel of genocide is a manifestation of anti-Semitism. It's also a form of Holocaust denial, because if what Israel is doing today is what the Germans did to them, what the Nazis did to them, then there was no Holocaust, because all Israel's done is support and self-defense. Germany, on the other hand, went out of their way to kill as many Jewish babies deliberately as is possible, as Hamas has done on October 7th. Okay. Professor, do you see any First Amendment dangers in the bill passed by the House to expand the definition of anti-Semitism? I think it's a good bill, and I'm glad it was passed. This is the time to pass a bill that includes anti-Semitism among the other forms of racism that federal law prohibits. There might be arguments about the edges concerning what the definition means. For example, a very right-wing congresswoman from Georgia said she couldn't sign the statute because it would mean that if you believed in the New Testament that the Jews killed Jesus, that would make you an anti-Semite. No, it wouldn't. We're talking about modern day anti-Semitism. And so I think the statute, probably most of it at least, will be upheld. Not all of it, but most of it. All right, a little humor. Woody Allen's Midsummer Night Comedy was genius. You remember I asked about favorite Woody Allen movies. And his grandfather's watch joke was the funniest ever. So for those of you who are unlucky enough not to know that joke, I will tell it to you. Woody Allen shows, I think, Annie Hall, his watch. And he says, this watch came from great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, been in the family 1,000 years. And on his deathbed, my father sold me that watch. So that's the joke. My father sold me the watch. There's a little bit of anti-Semitism in there, maybe, but it's permissible. You know, cheap Jews, man on his deathbed sells his son or grandson his watch. We'll take that. We can't be too sensitive about those issues. But look, the issue of anti-Semitism is getting worse. It's not getting better. It's getting worse because young people have no idea they're part of a long history of bigotry. That the history of anti-Semitism is older. And at least as pervasive as the history of other forms of racism, anti-Black racism, anti-gay, homophobia, anti-Muslim, and other issues. Anti-Semitism seems to be more enduring. It just looks like it's just not going away. And so I think it's important to at least get some semblance of context and historical background. I want to end with just one more piece that is probably one of my most valued possessions. This is what's called a Schutzpass. It was an actual document that saved the life of that woman. A man named Raoul Wallenberg, who put his life in danger and eventually lost his life, coming from Sweden, and he became the consul in Hungary, in Budapest, and he gave out thousands of these fake passes that allowed these Jews to walk through Nazi lines and not be executed. And his initial, the W, was the most valuable thing in the world. And this is an actual schutzpass. I've been trying to locate the woman who lived as the result of it, but I was not able to. But this is something I will always treasure. So, you know, I hope anti-Semitism may be on the way out. It looked like it might have been after the Second World War, but it's back with a vengeance. Thank you, college and university students and faculty members who have reintroduced one of the worst bigotries in history. You are now part of one of the worst aspects of world history. You are now part of the long, long history of anti-Semitism, Nazism, and anti-Judaism. Welcome to the worst club in the world.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.